Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the...
Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 193 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes, search Locked On Thunder, subscribe to the podcast there, leave a review once you're on that page, and find us on audioboom.com. Log on to normantranscript.com. You can check out my blog, Thunder Road. It's under the sports tab on the site. You can see all my Thunder coverage there. I'm on every day of the week for now, Monday through Friday, like I said on yesterday's episode. In case you missed that, I recorded an episode with Royce Young of ESPN, a 12, 13-time guest, whatever he is, recorded with Royce Young from Houston. We did that in the Toyota Center after the Thunder were eliminated by the Rockets after Game 5 of their first-round series. They lost 105-99 in Game 5 and got eliminated, just in case you haven't checked the news in like 36 hours. Though I imagine if you're someone who listens to this podcast, you probably already know that the Thunder got eliminated. But you can listen to my recap of that, more recap of the series, some look ahead to the offseason, a lot of that kind of stuff. Talked with Royce in the arena for about 25 minutes with that. I thought that turned out well, so you can go back, you can listen to that. Today I'm just going to take some Twitter questions, talk about the offseason, do something a little bit short. Tomorrow I'm going to have a guest on. I'll go a little bit longer to end the week. Next week I'm still going to be on 5 days a week next week. I'm going to figure out what I'm doing. I'll do some off-season preview stuff. Sam Presti has his end-of-year press conference on, when is it? On Monday. So I'll be talking about that. Today was exit interviews. Not a ton to take away from exit interviews. There's rarely a ton to take away from exit interviews. Russell Westbrook said that Oklahoma City is a place he'd like to be. Not the place he'd like to be, but a place he'd like to be. Nick Collison said that he would like to play. He would like to continue playing. That's something that, you know, kind of suspected. People around the team expected that. No one is surprised by that. The Thunder thought that he wanted to continue playing. But this is the first time he's come out and said publicly that he wants to continue playing. And so we'll see what ends up happening with Nick Collison. I don't know what's going to happen there. Andre Roberson said he'd like to return to the Thunder. Taj Gibson said twice. Both those guys are free agents. Roberson is restricted. Taj Gibson is unrestricted. Taj Gibson said it after Game 5, and then he said again at exit interviews that he would like to return. He said he told Sam Presti that he'd like to come back to the Thunder. So that might be something, it might not. Free agents, the way to contextualize is free agents almost, or I should say soon-to-be free agents. These guys are not technically yet free agents. But the soon-to-be ones at the exit interviews, that kind of stuff, they always tend to say that they want to come back. That's like a thing. It's not just a Thunder thing. You see that with all organizations, guys saying they want to come back, unless there's like some sort of animosity or something like that. Guys are pretty much always saying they want to come back. Still, it's certainly not a bad sign for the Thunder that either of those guys said that. I'm going to be really intrigued to see what happens with Roberson, what happens with Gibson. If the Thunder re-sign both those guys and kind of stay pat, which I don't think is necessarily what's going to happen, but just for the sake of argument, if they were to do that and not necessarily let go of a bunch of salary, like go of a Kanter-ish contract or an Oladipo-ish contract or something like that, they would hit into the luxury tax, and they'd be doing that to basically retain a 47-win team. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Taj Gibson, what happens with Andre Roberson. Asking around the league, the price on Roberson tends to be around 12 to 15 a year, something like that. I think he could end up getting something like $50 to $60 million over 4 years. And as for Gibson, it's tough. Someone who knows a lot about this stuff mentioned to me he could be the type of candidate who could go for that big one-year deal, compared it to Jeff Green. Not that he's a Jeff Green-type player, but the Jeff Green-type free agent. Thinks he could just try to cash in on a one-year deal for a lot of money, try to get one big one-year payday, and then take, you know, a two- or three-year deal the following year. Because he's a vet, but it's not like he's super old. He's in his early 30s, so he could still probably get a 2 or 3 year deal if he produces next year the way that he produced it, the way that he produced this year. He could still probably get a 2-3 year deal after that. But it'll be interesting following Gibson. Gibson's a really solid player, but I don't know if he's necessarily, he's not a starting four on a really good team in a lot of places. He's a great third big man. He's a great third big man to have. During this playoff series, he was probably the Thunder's third, fourth best, one of their 3 or 4 best players on the floor. I don't think there's any question about that with the way he played. I voiced on this podcast a lot. I wondered why he didn't play more. But he could end up getting in that 12-ish range, 13, 14 a year, something like that, if he wants to take a 2 or 3 year deal. It's going to be interesting to see how the Thunder handle that. Are the Thunder, did they just want him for 25 games? How are they going to move forward with or without Taj Gibson? How are they going to handle that free agency situation? Let's move on to some of these Twitter questions. First Twitter question, let's go, from my editor, Caleb Slinkard. And I have to take his question because he's my editor. And who knows what's going to happen to me if I don't. So, Caleb, I'm taking your question. Don't get mad at me. And here it is. Explain the Westbrook extension talk for folks. I imagine Caleb posed this one to me because he saw me kind of jabbing with some people on Twitter today and last night and whatnot when talking about Russell Westbrook's contract situation. So, for some people, you probably already know this and this won't be breaking news, but there seem to be a lot more people than I realized. And maybe this is on me and Royce and Eric and Brett and the rest of the OKC reporters for not conveying the situation well enough. I don't think that's what it is because I've talked about it a lot and I know Royce has talked about it a lot. I think there are some people who just kind of saw, ooh, Russell Westbrook signed an extension last summer and they just kind of stopped reading because they didn't want to see what was beyond it. Russell Westbrook only extended 1 year last summer. That was it. He extended 2 more years onto his deal. He was going to be a free agent in 2017. He extended 1 guaranteed year and a player option. And that was it. So he pushed back his free agency 1 year from 2017 to 2018. He could be under contract with the Thunder if he wants to under the same contract, if he wants to in 2018-19, but it's a player option. That won't be picked up. He'll either sign an extension this summer, which he's eligible to do, or he'll become a free agent in 2018. Those are the only two options, for real. Like, realistically. The player option technically, contractually exists, but it's irrelevant. He's under contract for $28.5 million next year. But the Thunder are able to offer him a massive, massive contract extension that would make him the highest paid player in the NBA if he were to sign it this summer. That's new under the CBA. Under the old CBA, for the most part, guys could not extend. That's why, like, the Thunder, if you remember last summer, the Thunder had to stay way under the cap so they could pay the difference in what the increase in Westbrook's salary was going to be. Now you can extend guys under this new CBA, which is going to kick in July 1st, and that's when the Thunder are going to be eligible to make a contract extension offer to Westbrook. July 1st, that's the big one. Now, if he doesn't accept it right away, that's possible. That's plausible. And it's not like, if he doesn't accept it by July 3rd, then you're gone. Then you're done. But this is more money. This is more money than any other team can offer Russell Westbrook. No other team can offer Russell Westbrook this contract. No one. It's not close. He'll make like $70 million more with this extension. It's over $200 million over 5 years. And that's a very intentionally written new rule to try to help teams retain guys. If Westbrook says no to that, if he says no to that difference in money, if he says no after having been in Oklahoma City for 9 years with the same organization, they have to trade him. Now we'll see what happens. But if he definitively says no on the contract extension, if he doesn't want $70 million, more than he could make the following summer, no matter what. They got to at least seriously consider trading him. And that's why this is a big deal. If he doesn't accept, then all of a sudden the Thunder have to make a move. Maybe he wants to see what they do in the offseason first. Who knows what he's thinking? He said at exit interviews that he hasn't been thinking about it. That he's thinking about his child. His wife Nina is pregnant right now and she's like a few weeks away. She's a few weeks away, if even. So he's got other things on the mind right now, but trust me, he's thought about the contract extension. Someone's telling you you could be the highest paid person in the history of your profession. You'll think about that. Maybe you're not sitting down mapping it out yet, but you'll think about it. Maybe you haven't made a decision yet, but you'll think about it. It's not a thing you just don't think about. Anyone's going to think about that. But this is now the lead story involving the Thunder. Lead story is always Russell Westbrook, and this is now the lead story involving the Thunder. We'll get away from it for a second, though, from that true talk. The Thunder seem obsessed with having an old vet on the roster. If Collison doesn't return, who's a candidate for that role? So Nick Collison said that he wants to keep playing at exit interviews. I actually think it's just going to be Nick Collison. It's fine. You have a 15th guy on the roster. Bring him back for the minimum. I asked a couple people after exit interviews today. They seem to think there was no way that he was going to get more than the minimum. That he could keep playing for sure, but he's not going to get more than the minimum. For the most part, almost no contracts are for more than pre-negotiated ones. Now, it's going to be interesting to see what happens during this new collective bargaining agreement era. New collective bargaining agreement kicks in, and these ratios could change. But for the most part, the vast majority of contracts in the NBA are pre-negotiated contracts. That means they're for the minimum, they're for exceptions, or they're for the max. That's pretty much it. You know, you sign for the mid-level exception, or you sign for the room exception, or you sign for the biannual exception, or you sign for the minimum, or that's the majority of contracts. So you're not going to see him sign for like a mid-level or something like that, or a biannual or something like that. So for the most part, like, a team would just have to be under the cap and would have to say, yeah, we'll give you an extra $700,000, an extra $1 million to try to get you to come here. And that's plausible. But I don't know if Nick Collison's going to be the guy who they do that with, considering he played 6 minutes a game this year. So I think Nick Collison is going to, if he wants to play, 1 year minimum deal, seems like a Thunder move. He's still a locker room leader. It's just an extra 15th roster spot. They like having, like that true talk mentioned, they like having that veteran guy on the end of their bench. That could easily just be Nick Collison. He fits that perfectly. So I actually think it's going to be Nick Collison. Next one from Dustin McGowan. Who else might be interested in Andre Roberson? So Roberson's a free agent. He's going to be restricted. That's going to complicate matters a little bit. Now, restricted free agents are not necessarily as untouchable as they used to be in this new collective bargaining era. Used to have to wait 72 hours for an offer sheet to be matched. This time, it's going to be 48 now. But still, for the most part, teams that have cap space, the reason why you see restricted free agents tend to go later into the summer is because teams that have cap space, when they sign guys to offer sheets, that cap space gets tied up. And if a team waits, the longest amount of time it can wait to match or not match that offer sheet, all of a sudden if that gets matched, now you just missed out on 2 days of potentially signing guys because your cap space was tied up and now you got nothing. So that's why guys tend to go later. I think Roberson is probably a good candidate to go late into the summer, which means I think he could end up on a team, or at least having a team interested in him. That's a team that's going to have enough cap room to where they can make an offer to him late. And when I say late, I mean, a week in, mid-July, something like that. A team that has enough cap room to make a room late, or maybe a team that's kind of in flux. So my candidates are Brooklyn. You know, Brooklyn's got wings that aren't shooters also and are defenders. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson is obviously one of those guys. Caris LeVert is another one of those guys. But, man, Brooklyn just needs NBA players. Brooklyn just needs NBA players. And if they think that they can at least turn Roberson into a decent guy, into a decent shooter, I mean, then maybe that's something that they want to get because they just need NBA players. They've also shown a history of making offers to restricted free agents. They did it with Alan Crabb. They did it with Tyler Johnson last offseason. That was with Sean Marks' first full offseason as a GM, first offseason period, I don't know why I said full. But with their history of making offers to restricted guys, I think they're someone. Indiana kind of makes sense to me. We'll see what happens with them with Paul George. But they could slide him. They could just play him at the two, which might be his best defensive position. They can play him at the two. I could see him working next to Jeff Teague. But they've got free agents too. They've got cap room. They've got the ability to create a ton of cap room depending on what happens. Who knows what ends up happening with Paul George. Teague could be there, could not be there because his contract is up. So we'll see what happens with Indiana, but I think that's a possibility. And then Denver's a possibility. Denver has a lot of pieces. They have a lot of pieces, but Roberson's age kind of fits their timeline. We'll see what ends up happening with Gallinari. They've got a lot of clusters at a lot of different places, but defensively, he fits them well. And Denver, they're going to play Nikola Jokic a ton of minutes. He's great. but they're going to need to be really strong defensively on the wing. And the fact that they're going to have a center who shoots threes, that helps with the spacing. You can still basically play four out. Even with Andre Robertson on the floor, you can still play lineups. We can have Gallinari at the four, Jokic at the five. You can have, you know, Gary Harris at the two, and you can have a... They might need to find a point guard. Depends on how much they believe in Moutier. But if you have a point guard who shoots threes, you know, whatever. You can have 4 3-point shooters on the floor. It's not like Andre Robertson is in there with that clustered Thunder offense without any shooters. So I think Denver makes a lot of sense, because if you're going to play Jokic a ton of minutes, which they should, he's awesome, he's incredible, he's not there defensively, and he's probably never going to be a great defender. And that's the most important defensive position. But if you surround him, I think he's a smart enough defender where if you surround him with really good long wings, Robertson, Gary Harris, guys who can get into passing lanes, guys who are good guarding the ball, guys who are good team defenders, like those sorts of players, I think that's a really good fit around him, and I think he'd be nice in Denver. That's basically my thoughts on where Robertson is a good fit. I am not quite sure what teams are going to be going out in him. That's not like me reporting Denver has interest in Andre Robertson. Although the Thunder were talking to Denver about potential trades right before the deadline. But I don't know, you know, if Denver loves Robertson for the price he's going to be at. Like I said, my educated guess, based on from conversations I've had around the league, is he's going to be somewhere in that 12 to 15 a year range. And I think Denver might be a good situation mutually for the Nuggets and for him. Next one from Cody Gibson. Do players get better or worse playing with Russ? That is the question. What does he need to do to make others around him better? So the one problem that I have with this question, because this is the one that's like been going around and, you know, the Ringer's been all over this, and this, the problem with that question, and I'm not calling out Cody because Cody has 140 characters to ask that question. It's not a bad question, and it's one that tons of people have asked, and it's one that tons of people talk about. But my problem is there's no nuance to that conversation. Like, some guys make everyone better. Steve Nash makes everyone better. Well, not makes. Now he wouldn't make anyone better. Made everyone better. Jason Kidd made everyone better. But, like, even Chris Paul doesn't make everyone better. Does Chris Paul make Blake Griffin better? Isn't Blake Griffin better when he can handle the ball more, be in the open floor? He can be the one getting rebounds, taking it up on the break more often. He can be the guy at the top running an offense. Like, isn't that when Blake Griffin is better? Not everyone makes everyone better, but Chris Paul makes J.J. Redick better. Chris Paul makes DeAndre Jordan a whole lot better. And it's the same thing with Russell Westbrook. Now, I think Chris Paul is more of a guy who certain guys would want to play with, for sure, because, you know, of Russell Westbrook's ball dominance and the amount of times that he shoots the ball. But I think Russell Westbrook made Victor Oladipo better. Made him more efficient. Turned him into a good corner three shooter because of all the open looks he's getting. Turned him into a good catch and shoot guy. I'm not so convinced that, like, Oladipo's hesitance is completely on Westbrook. Maybe part of it is. But I think that's really a lot in Oladipo's personality. I think Westbrook makes him better. I think Westbrook probably makes Alex Abrines better. Westbrook doesn't not pass Alex Abrines. I don't know where that narrative came from. Westbrook does pass Alex Abrines. In fact, I think next year, one of the big things in their offense is going to be Westbrook-Abrines pick and rolls. When Abrines slips that pick and roll and then pops to the wing. I think they'll be running that a real good amount, because they were running that a lot late in the season. And Westbrook likes doing that. Westbrook likes Abrines too. And Abrines is only going to be better. He was a rookie this year. He's going to be good. He's going to be a good player. He's going to shoot the heck out of the ball next year, I think. But Westbrook doesn't make Steven Adams better. Certainly not. I don't think he makes Andre Robertson any better. I think sometimes Robertson feels like he can't cut because he doesn't want to bring defenders into the lane when Westbrook is driving. And I don't think they're necessarily always on the same page. He doesn't make Steven Adams any better. He doesn't always find him on those pick and rolls. He doesn't always find him on those lobs. The Thunder don't run nearly enough ball screens, in my opinion, with Adams, because Westbrook ends up isolating on wings and that kind of stuff. And Adams is such a good screener. He's a pretty good roller. I don't think Westbrook makes him better, so I think you have to go player by player. I really think you have to go player by player. And then you can have that conversation. No one, very few guys make everyone better. Very, very few. And very few great players make no one better. There were some guys Kobe made better. Very few great players make no one better. So to have the conversation of he doesn't make his players better or he does make players better, to me is just a silly conversation, because that's not what it should be. It should be, does he make Victor Oladipo better, or does he make Steven Adams better? And you really have to break it down to that level. And I realize it's not as fun in the bar to have that conversation, but that's really the only way to have that to be like a legitimate conversation. And if you're having it with your friends, that's fine. But like, I see people in media have that conversation. I'm like, come on, let's be like really smart people too. Really smart people too. I'm like, come on, let's talk about the individual people, because there are individual people he makes worse. No question. And whose development he stunts. I think he definitely has stunted a lot of development because of the way he plays. And then there are individuals he makes better. And that's a boring take. But I think it's the most accurate one. You can remember I'm on every weekday, Monday through Friday. iTunes to subscribe to Locked On Thunder. Questions or comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com. Or you can find me on Twitter at Fred Katz, FredKatz. Log on to normantranscript.com. Check out my blog, Thunder Road, for more Thunder coverage. You can see what's next for the Thunder there, which is today. It's just exit interview stuff that's going to be up there. I am going to be taking off writing when? Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Vacation. I need it. I'm happy about it. I'm proud of it. I'm going to take a quick long weekend because I normally don't get weekends, so I'm going to take a long weekend. I'm not going to write. I'm going to take one day off the podcast in that case. There's not going to be a podcast Monday, but there will be one tomorrow. I will have a guest tomorrow. Until then, Locked On Thunder is locking up.